Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of In Focus, where we are going to be talking about camera settings for landscape and architecture photography. So let's dive right into it. Hi everyone, welcome to In Focus with Adam Goldberg Photography and Joseph Roybal Photography. I am Adam.
Hey everybody, I'm Joe. Joseph, how are y'all doing?
Hopefully everyone's doing well. I am well. It is the prime summertime here in Atlanta, so it's pretty warm, I'm not gonna lie.
Right. It's gotta be getting hot there. What is it today? Let's talk about weather for a minute.
All right. It is 95 degrees out, and I could check the humidity for you, but when I did my 30 seconds outside for the morning, it was pretty humid. So I'm expecting some afternoon thunderstorms to come.
Your real feel temp is like 105.
Probably. What about you? What's it like in Denver?
Sunny and clear, man. Yeah. Sunny. Denver, always sunny.
It is that I do miss that about living there. That was one of the nice things about living there is you get like over 300 days of sunshine. So
I love we're talking about weather here. Yeah. And you just had a birthday.
I did. So I'm an old man now, but it was a good celebration. Enjoyed it. And feeling good.
Happy birthday, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Well,
but go ahead.
This week, I was just going to say, this week we've got some, I'm excited for this one because you can explain it, but we're talking about this and I'm excited how it came together. So you go and explain it, but I'm excited for it.
All right. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about camera settings, and Joe is going to talk about things from a little bit more of a landscape perspective and maybe create a little video to go with it that we can kind of have as an add-on supplemental to this week's episode. And I'm going to talk about things from an architecture photography standpoint, kind of the standard settings that I use. And I think this is going to be a really interesting episode for a couple of reasons. One, people always ask about camera settings. What'd you use to get this? And the first thing that I would say is, well, in some ways it doesn't matter because every situation is going to be different. And so you could go into the exact same spot with the exact same camera settings and not get the same shot. So I'm going to preface all of this with kind of that little piece of information. That said, there are things you can do to kind of set yourself up for success. And I think that's really what we're going to be going for here today is kind of talk through our camera settings, why we use them, and then hopefully that'll get our audience a good starting point to, again, get them set up for success, whether they're out shooting landscapes, which is, again, what you're going to be talking about, and some more wildlife stuff, so that way you can get the shot when you're out there. And then myself, from an architectural standpoint, kind of what I use. And I think the big difference between them is going to be good for our audience as well, because yours is kind of, you got to be ready to go. You sometimes only have 1 second to get your shot. And I, on the other hand, when I'm doing a lot of the architecture work, I have an hour potentially to get my shot set up and get everything going, which works because now that I'm an old man, being able to move a little bit slower does kind of fit for me. So
we were talking earlier, it's like the differences of like being a brontosaurus and then being a little bit more of like a cheetah.
Yeah, exactly. You're young and fast and I'm old and slow. But anyways, do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
Well, I guess I can go first, man. Here, you know, I can go through explaining a little bit of, you know, because you've been taking the lead on the last couple videos, me being on the road. And so let me go first this one and just going through, you know, why I do what I do, my different settings, and also explaining the reason why I have these set up the way I do on is that I'm now with Sony, and Sony is a little more confusing at times. So they also have the customized, the dial settings, mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3. And so, yeah, I think I'll go first and run through these.
Okay, cool. All right, so we'll do landscape first, and then we'll talk about kind of the more architecture, real estate stuff. So go
for me. And then, yeah, and so like Adam mentioned that I am going to, and I think it's just a good idea to, I'll do a little recording of the backside of my Sony, the screen, and that way that will kind of make a little more sense when you're thinking about how to set this stuff up on the Sony. And I have the A7 III and the A7 R3. So that being said, primarily, you know, and as we've discussed before, Adam, in a lot of times, you know, I teach and I explain, aperture priority is usually where I go for 99% of my landscape work. Aperture priority being just that I know that I need to keep the shot either in focus or out of focus, if you will. And so I'm always thinking I want to have my aperture be my focal point. So, you know, a lot of people can achieve the same thing with manual mode. I simply think that not worrying about my shutter speed and so many different variables in there, aperture priority just lets me achieve that quickly and get that done. So aperture priority for most of my settings and most of my stuff. And then manual for night photography, astrophotography, and manual for wildlife. So with the Sony A7 R3, I have my dial on top set on 1, 2, and 3 for wild or landscape for 1, wildlife for setting 2, astro for setting 3. But let's go through my settings. And this is where I think that having that little video will end up making sense as well and helpful. So I'm just going to look at my notes here a little bit. But for landscape mode, like I mentioned, and for landscapes, generally aperture priority. And then keeping your settings of your ISO at your native base ISO. So being on the Sony system, it's ISO 100. I came from Nikon, it was 64 on the D850. And Adam, you know, you probably have 100, I'm guessing, since you're Canon.
It is, it's 100 on Canon.
Okay. So, when Adam and I, and when photographers mention your native base ISO, that's just, you can Google it and you can find it. But, you know, like on my Sony, I can go down to ISO 50, but that's taking and having the system kind of run algorithms to really slow things down even more. And it's just, it can affect your results and make the image not as clean. So find your native base and go with that. Autofocus. I have my camera set to back button focus. So it takes away the option when I press the shutter button halfway, because I don't want the camera refocusing every single time. I want to set my focus and leave it, take some shots, check for sharpness, refocus if I need, and kind of go that route. So I have it set for the AF button on the back of the Sony, and I press that, focus, I'm good to go. And then I set that for autofocus single. I believe it's S. I believe it's single for S, because I want the camera to focus once and that's it. Wildlife, I like autofocus continuous. So then that way when something's moving, it keeps tracking that animal or person, whatever is in the frame. So AFS, metering. I like to have the matrix or the multimetering, depending on your system, but having the camera meter the light throughout the entire frame, not a single spot. So just having it set for that. And that's pretty much true for all of these settings.
So that's across kind of all of them. That's not just for landscape. You're kind of going through all of it.
So that can kind of be true for all of these. I like to let the camera see the light for everything. And then I feel like once you get into the mode for yourself, you know, thinking about, you just see it, how the camera sees it and vice versa. It just helps you just know what it's going to output. Essentially you get that flow.
Mm-hmm.
White balance. This is a tricky one. A lot of, you know, photographers out there like to say, at least take it out of auto so you control it a little bit. You know, I know you're probably in architecture. I could be wrong. I could be misspeaking here, but I'm guessing you probably control your white balance a bit more than auto. I've noticed that on the Sony at times I'll get varying colors if I'm in auto between the A7 R3 and A7 III. Sometimes the auto doesn't like sync up perfectly, but it generally does. So I'll either be auto or I'll pop into sunny weather, but I never really go to cloudy. I never do any of that. I just keep it really straightforward so that in post I can adjust that. And then if I keep it, if I were to, for example, go into sunny and it locks it in, then that way, if I'm doing a batch process, like say you're a wedding photographer, something like this, it all of your settings would be the exact same. So that could be easier in that regard.
Yeah.
RAW, obviously, not JPEG. And then I start off with F10. So I have all of these settings just kind of like that, you know, cookie cutter-ish, if you will, standardized landscape photography setup with base ISO, F10, you know, auto white balance or sunny, and then, you know, aperture priority. And that's me for that. That's my landscape setting that I saved to my mode dial one on both the A7 III and A7 R3.
Okay.
Any questions on that before I go to my, you know, my wildlife, if you will?
No, I mean, I think that makes sense. You know, I think the only thing that, you know, maybe folks might have a question is kind of why I have F10, because.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I think there's maybe some questions that can come up about, well, where is your lens the sharpest? And
exactly.
Arden, if you go up to like F20 or something like that, that's making the entire scene like super, super sharp. So wouldn't you maybe want that instead of,
yeah,
you know, something right in the middle?
Exactly. So, you know, F10, I like to start at F10 because most, you know, you can run tests on your own lenses and if you really want to do that. But as a general rule of thumb, F8 to F10, all lenses are sharpest right there from near to far, if you will, like at a certain distance, but they're the sharpest right there. It's like the sweet spot. You know, you think of when you think of a wedding photographer or whatnot, where just the eye, the person's eye or whatever is in focus, you know, that would be more like 2.8, or that's where you get less depth. You know, the depth of field is really shallow. So for landscape work, I am always generally going, you know, in architecture too, you're going for everything being sharp. So
yeah,
I'm thinking, okay, the sharpest part of this lens, the sharpest aperture is F8 to F10. Then I focus different points throughout that scene and I stack those images later in Photoshop for perfect sharpness.
Okay.
Like you mentioned, Adam, F20, F22, and a lot of photographers will do this. I know I did it years ago before I got into the stacking. I would shoot at like F22 just to get more of that photo from right in front of me to the mountains in the distance in focus in one photo, because that helps. It tends to affect the sharpness though of the photograph, you know, for diffraction. That's physics that we don't need to get in here.
Yeah.
But if anyone's curious about, you know, diffraction, just look up diffraction and photography and lenses F22 and you can read all about it. But that's why I avoid 22 and that higher.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, that's
not. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think maybe doing a focus stack episode would be helpful for our audience for that reason. Because I think you will get sharper photos if you're, like you said, kind of living in that F8, maybe F12, somewhere in there instead of trying to get it all in one photo at F20, F22 or something like that. So
totally. Absolutely.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, cool. So, wildlife settings.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, this is kind of, you know, I'm not a per se wildlife photographer, but I have done enough of it to realize, you know, to freeze motion, you know, a bird in flight, flying by, something running very quickly, and I'm talking very fast, but I'm more thinking of, you know, like a wing flap of a bird. A minimum of a shutter speed of 1/1000th of a second is necessary. Somewhere 1/1000, 1/1250, somewhere right there. So I have my settings on the Sony for mode dial number 2 to be manual mode, so then I can just adjust my shutter as I need to go.
Okay.
But then with that, I have my ISO set to auto ISO. So then the camera just adjusts appropriately what ISO the camera needs to create a clean image and sharp image, because I'm going to be hand holding versus a tripoded photo, you know, and landscape.
Yeah.
So then I'm simply able to go from, hey, I'm shooting a mountain and a peak, and then now over here, I've got a bison charging at me and I want to photograph that. I can pull it off, click it to mode dial 2 and get a shot.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. But manual mode, 1/1000th of a second is minimum. ISO is set to auto.
Yeah.
And then with this, the one differential, you know, on the focus mode is instead of the AFS for just the one single drive focus where on landscape it does the one and stop, I have it set for AFC. So when you imagine something running towards you or away from you, it ends up focusing and tracking on that the entire time. So I can just hold the shutter down and it's clack, 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 and it keeps it in focus.
Yeah, I think that's an important one. Certainly, I think the two things you said that are really important for the wildlife stuff, and I was even still playing last year, I went on a African safari, and you know, so it's like I was just playing with the settings kind of the whole time, because like you said, the light is changing, you're doing shoots in the morning, you're doing shoots in the middle of the day, all that stuff, and you know, cheetahs run whatever 60 something miles an hour, and you know, you have to have that fast shutter speed, otherwise your photo's gonna be blurry, because like you said, not only is the animal running fast, but you're going like this with your camera to try and track it. And so like you said, being over 1/1000th of a second and you know, letting the camera do some of the work on the ISO side, so yeah, maybe you might have like a little bit more noise than you would like otherwise, is going to give you a lot of flexibility to make sure that your photo is something that you can kind of pull out and use, show your friends and family and all that stuff about how amazing a photographer you are, because you know, you got the bison charging you, the cheetah, you know, running or something like that. So shutter speed is definitely important. Then I think to your point, kind of that the tracking autofocus, it's a little bit different on everybody's camera, but definitely if your focus is to be shooting wildlife, make sure that you are using the tracking focus. That way it's continuing to focus with every time that shutter clicks.
Right, exactly. And you know, it's super important. And so with that, I also have it set to the camera. I also, you know, and this is if you have, you know, I keep saying if I have it set to this because I'm using the Sony and I'm able to do this. Some cameras you're unable to, you know, have all these settings saved, but this little rule of thumb, kind of like what Adam and I are talking about here today, is just, you know, these are your settings. If you can kind of just mental note them, write them down, have them with you, that's the other way you can do this. Yep. I also like to go to my widest aperture, meaning whatever my lens can do. So if it's an F4 lens, but I generally like F4. F4 looks really great when you're working with birds, animals, anything like this, if you're wanting to isolate the subject a little more. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, so then the background's a little soft and you're not seeing everything in the distance. But again, these are just the quick, you know, F4, ISO auto, and then you can adjust from there since it's in manual. And then one of the questions I get by a lot of people and frustrations, and, you know, and it's just like kind of to head this off at the pass for everyone watching, it's, you know, when you're shooting an ISO auto, your camera will go as high as it will go. And so that can create a ton of noise, like you mentioned in the photograph. So I have my ISO, my auto ISO setting, just set to cap out at like ISO 5000. So the camera will never go higher than 5000. And at that point, I might start getting some like blur in the photo or shake or something. But at that point, it's like, I don't really want to even mess with that photo later anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point, because all these cameras can handle a significant amount of noise, but it does get to a point where, all right, it wouldn't be usable anyways. So the camera, I mean, especially your Sony, and I know some of the newer Canons as well, and I'm sure the Nikons can too. It's like you can get about 3 stops of dynamic range just to pull out of a single photo. So even, you know, by capping it out at either 5,000 or 6,400, whatever you would feel comfortable with, is then you're still going to have a couple stops of dynamic range if it's a little bit darker than maybe you wanted it to be able to pull it out and get the image that you were really hoping for, and you're just now reducing some of the noise.
Exactly. It's better to have a grainy photo than a blurry photo. So that's what I always explain to, you know, to anybody, is like, I think that way, because, you know, you can still clean up the noise for the most part.
Yeah.
You can't really like sharpen something up per se.
Yep.
So, and again, like auto white balance or sunny, depending there, raw, and that's my wildlife. But again, it's a minimum of 1/1000th of a second on your shutter and then going up from there. But that's a good starting point.
Awesome.
Cool. Any questions there before I go to like the night and Astro work?
No, I'm excited to hear kind of how you do this.
Okay, cool. So Astro, this is going to be my third dial, drive mode or whatnot on the Sony. So that I'm able to just click to, and then I've got my base settings here. And then these are kind of where I like to say, if you don't have this drive, if you don't have these saveability, you know, not knob dials, just remember these settings, and this will get you going from a really good starting point again. Manual mode. I like to start off with 10 seconds because my widest lens is a 14 to 24. And the reason why I'm going for 10 seconds is because if I go longer than 10, if you will, I'm usually shooting at 14 millimeters. And if I go longer than 10 seconds, I'll start getting star trails in the stars. And I want them to be a sharp point. So I like to just bring my time down less than the focal length.
Okay.
So if I went to 15 seconds and I was shooting at 14 millimeters, I might start getting some blur in there. And I just want to be on the safe side.
Yep. Because stars are always moving. So you do have to think about that, because you might think, well, I can just, you know, stay at F8 and, you know, go for 2 minutes. But it's like, then you're going to start getting star trails. So it really depends on kind of the type of photo you're going for. Do you want star trails? And if that's the case, you can go for really long star trails and that can be a cool photo. Or right. As Joe is kind of talking about here, he's going for that really tack sharp star. And remember, it's always moving.
Yeah. So. It's always moving. So I go manual mode, 10 seconds to start from. And then I have the camera set to automatically and start off from ISO 1600. And then at F2.8, auto white balance. And yeah, that's really it. The focus mode on that is the AFS, as in Sam, at AFS again. So that way I'm just like one press of the back button, I can focus on, if it's bright enough, still like infinity, like a peak, if you will.
Yeah.
But so at 2.8, 1600 ISO and 10 seconds, I can take one shot. And then from there, I can get an idea. Do I want to go to, you know, 11 seconds, or do I want to go a little higher ISO? But I'm already at 2.8. And so right there, that is my quick and dirty on the Astro, because it's, you know, like I said, 1600 is a really good ISO, I feel, to start from, because it's still really clean. You don't have to clean it up much in post for noise, the graininess of it. And 10 seconds is a perfect starting point for me because I'm using that 14 to 24. Yeah. And yeah, so that's just like, Astro is probably like, it's not the easiest when it comes to shooting in the dark, because that's hard, but you've got that latitude there to just, things are slower at night, so you can make some adjustments a little bit.
So a couple questions on the Astro. So for the focus, you're not doing manual focus, or you are doing manual focus?
So, I'll have it set to the AFS to start off, because a lot of my images, I like to focus and shoot the foreground in the blue hour. And then I blend that into the night sky.
Okay.
If we as photographers, or, you know, everyone watching here, if you're shooting just one single frame, I am then also in manual mode for the focusing. And with the Sony and with live, or not live view, with the mirrorless cameras, your Canon, the R, the Nikon, the Z's, and, you know, really focusing on these three kind of camera brands here, I guess. I pop into manual mode. I have my focus peaking set to a, you know, very sensitive setting. And then I will zoom in on, you know, a distant star, slowly, very, very, very slowly rotate my focusing ring. And then once that brightest star gets to be, you know, very bright, and, you know, I can see that it, when it gets sharp.
Yeah.
And that is another incredible asset, you know, to me, I found going mirrorless to get away from the DSLRs. My keepers are, that ratio has gone way up for focus.
Yeah. It makes a huge difference.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Sony has a real great system on that. I'm sure the others do as well. I have it set to in manual mode. When I rotate the focusing ring, it automatically zooms me into 12x, if you will, 12.1 or 2, okay, somewhere in there. So it's really far in there, you know, way yeah, far in. And then I'm able to really see a star even at night in the dark.
Yeah. And that's huge because, I mean, you want it to be tack sharp. And so
yeah,
being able to zoom in. And again, if you don't have a mirrorless, which not everybody does, you still can use live view and zoom in. I think they're usually about times 10 or times so. 10. Yep. And that should still work really, really well. But again, using that live view for focus is huge.
Using live view is huge on any of these, you know, DSLRs or the mirrorless full frames, you know, or anything really. Like live view is just pretty important when it comes to night work. And then once it's dark enough to go into manual mode, that's when I'll switch over. And I'll switch to manual mode, I guess, you know, like as Adam mentioned, I'll switch to the manual mode on the lens once it's, you know, actually too dark for the camera to focus, and you'll know when that is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much when it's dark out.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well, that's really like my three settings and my three scenarios that I find myself in for the most part, you know, and even that like wildlife fish one, if you will, that would work if you're, for example, wanting to freeze, you know, like if it's really windy out and you're wanting the flowers to not blow around, you know, sometimes I'll just pop into that just to like start off quick with a fast shutter speed. And cause you know, then I can keep like my flowers sharp. That's happening.
Yeah, and then you can kind of build off of it.
Yeah. So I just find that these three settings or these three scenarios are generally what a landscape photographer finds them, you know, themselves in, mm-hmm, scenario settings. And so, starting there. So that's mine, man.
I think that's awesome. That's helpful. And what we did mention at the beginning is that we'll put these in the show notes as well. Yes. So if you miss something, you don't have to go back and watch it, but feel free to go back and watch it. But this will also be in the show notes. We'll put Joe's settings and then we'll put some of my details here for on the architecture side as well.
Yeah. There we go.
But that was great, Joe. Thank you.
Yeah, man. All right. So on to you. I'm excited to hear what you do because this is, well, it's kind of a secret.
Yeah. Secret, but not a secret. So I think, you know, people are going to find that actually some of the settings are going to be the same for a variety of reasons. But again, this is just kind of a good base place to start off. It's kind of your mm-hmm foundation, and then you're going to have to adjust based off of the lighting in the room, the situation. There's so many different variables, whether you are out in the field shooting landscape or, you know, in a hotel room where you're kind of completely controlling the light. And so right, just something to think about. There we go. Put that back on. So I'll kind of start in the same place as you did. I usually start with my aperture somewhere around that f8, f10 range. Mm-hmm. The lenses that I am using are for the most part, the tilt shift lenses from Canon, the 24, the 17, the 45. And that's usually their sweet spot, maybe F7.1, depending on the situation. But again, it's usually somewhere between about F8 and F10 is where I start out for my shot. Same with you, base ISO as low as you can go. And again, for a lot of cameras out there, that's going to be 100.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about when you are doing architecture photography is that you have a lot more flexibility with shutter speed and maybe some of these other things than you do with landscape, wedding photography, wildlife photography, where you can play with the shutter speed and still keep your ISO at its base ISO. So that way you're reducing the noise as much as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of white balance, Canon does such a good job with their white balance. I'm usually on auto white balance, actually. Mm-hmm. I know some photographers, they will do it manually, and I have played around with it and done it manually again. If I look at the auto white balance shot and it just doesn't look right, I'll go in and play with those Kelvin numbers to kind of get it where I want it to be. And so then that way, again, when I go into Photoshop and start doing my post-production, my image is closer to where I want it to be than maybe it would be otherwise. Yeah. But for the most part, I am at least starting out with auto white balance. That's not something that I'll adjust if it's sunny or cloudy, fluorescent lights, all that stuff. I kind of stick with auto white balance and kind of then go from there. Shutter speed is really going to change and vary. So I'm not going to get into that specific number that I'll start out with too much. Again, that's going to depend on the light in the space. Am I doing an interior and exterior, all that kind of stuff. One thing though is when people are now in the photo. So if you're shooting for an architect and they want some people in there and they want those people blurred, you know, you may have then have to play with your shutter speed and your ISO to get it right. It's usually around a quarter of a second or so. If someone's walking normally, you'll get a good blur. It can vary though, again.
Okay.
So, but again, quarter of a second's usually a pretty good starting point to kind of get the rest of your settings then in order to flush out, to be like, okay, is this going to work? You might have to have your model or talent do that walk two or three times.
Yeah.
To get it right. But at least if you start at a quarter of a second or so, hopefully that'll get you close and tell them to walk a little slower, a little faster.
Okay. And then to ask real quick, the ISO, are you still keeping it kind of at the 100 when you're doing that?
I try and keep it as low as possible.
Okay.
But again, depending on the lighting situation, you may have to go from 100, 400, 800 to get it right. Because now that you're involving people in the shot, you're losing some of the control that you would have if you're adding all this flash or other things.
So
you might have to adjust the ISO at that point.
Okay.
The nice thing is though, you know, if you're just going to be blending them in anyways, and they're blurred, the ISO can certainly be a little bit higher because they're blurry anyways. So you don't have to worry about noise and stuff as much. People, if that makes sense.
Yep. People blending. It's a whole new world. People blending. Awesome, man. Yeah. I was curious about that. That's good info right there.
Yeah. And then obviously if you have neutral density filters or a circular polarizer or something on the front of your lens, that's, you know, that can impact again your shutter speed and stuff as well. The one thing that I usually really, really try not to touch again is the aperture, because once you kind of have that dialed in, as soon as you're going to start blending in multiple exposures, if you change that, it could impact the focus just the slightest bit, and throw off the whole photo. So really do try and avoid making any changes to the f-stop number once you kind of have it.
Okay.
Any questions on any of that? Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it makes complete sense because we talked earlier, or I talked earlier about sharpness. We both did, about why we choose to shoot F10 roughly.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
So cool. Well, the one thing that I did want to add, because it is a variable with architecture photography, is if you're going to start adding in kind of some flash or artificial light, and kind of how does then now are you going to adjust your camera settings? Because for the most part, I do try and have my base layer be kind of just a natural ambient layer. And so different settings will affect different things. So changing one setting might affect your flash power. Another setting might affect your ambient light. So all of those things. So shutter speed is only impacting your ambient light. So it will not impact the flash power.
Correct.
The brightness of the flash. So that's really the shutter speed, again, is really where you can start controlling the light in the architecture, real estate, interior design, photography world. Really speeding up that shutter speed and adding flash is where you can now really just control the light by just having your flash be the primary focus of the image. And then obviously you'll have to blend that in later. If you start messing again with your ISO, aperture, which again, I probably wouldn't mess with anyways, that's going to affect both your shutter speed. It's going to, impact both your ambient light and your flash. So if you bump up your ISO from 100 to 200, you're doubling the ambient light and you're doubling how bright the flash is going to be, basically.
Right, just because the camera's more sensitive to the light.
The camera's now twice as sensitive to light. So there's no difference there. The only one that's really going to make a difference to anything is, again, the shutter speed, which is going to knock down your ambient light. And so a way then to adjust the flash power, the flash brightness, is either through flash power or distance, or adding on an umbrella or something like that.
Right.
So without messing with the settings too much, you know, if you're kind of like, all right, I want to really speed up my shutter speed, so that way I'm just completely working with my flash, and either the flash is then too bright or too dark.
Right.
You don't want to add any more of that ambient light. And what are some of the ways now you can adjust your flash? Well, you can move it farther away. You can add an umbrella, a reflector, bounce it around however you want, or you could just move it farther away, adjust the flash power. So it's a couple different ways to do it.
Totally.
Certainly. So, that's kind of the main thing is your shutter speed is kind of your driver really in terms of the ratio between flash and ambient light.
Right. And exactly like how, you know, and then also too, you know, if you, like you said, shutter speed and like speeding it up, you know, if you were to like slow that down, it would really fill in that, like, I mean, could you go slower if you wanted to, kind of like a slower reverse, like, what do they call it? Like the reverse curtain or the slow curtain or reverse curtain?
I mean, yeah. I mean, everything depends on what you want out of your image. So, I mean, if you, some of my images, if the lighting's really good, it'll be straight ambient. You know, I won't even add any.
Yeah, you don't need the flash, right?
You don't need to add any flash in. And so in that case, you know, if my shutter speed's 3 seconds, that's fine. Like, you know, it doesn't matter if right. if it's catching everything right. And I like all of the other settings, you know, and I have my, you know, circular polarizer on there. And so that's, you know, adding a couple stops of light. So I do need to, you know, have a whatever 1, 2, 3 second exposure.
Right.
If that's nailing it right, then so be it.
Correct. Gotcha. Yeah.
And then again, there's other times where you're just going to want to, which I talked about a little bit, kind of with the on-site architecture photography episode, you know, there's times where you're just going to want to bracket out from a really dark ambient only to a really bright ambient only. And so then all that is just adjusting your shutter speed.
Correct.
To match the scene. And so then that way you have that entire bracket before you start adding in any artificial or flash light.
Cool.
Yeah. So, that's, you know, again, it's a lot of actually the kind of the same
settings.
In a way, you know, it's finding that sharpest point of your lens and kind of using that as your starting point, and then using that base ISO as your starting point, and then adjusting if needed. But again, the advantage of using that base ISO is you're just going to be lowering any potential noise or anything that might be kind of pop in.
Yeah.
To the photo. Yeah. And I think, like we said at the beginning too, is that these are starting points, and I think a lot of times photographers are hesitant to talk about settings because I don't want anyone who's watching this to get so hung up on, oh, well, Adam uses these settings and Joe uses those settings. So that's what I'm going to use. And that's going to allow me to get a similar photo to what they have. But again, every situation is different. Every camera is a little bit different. How you want to shoot it, what your client maybe wants is different. And so there's so many variables and factors that go into it that don't want anyone to get too hung up on the specifics, but that these can be just really good starting points to use to get it. So that way you can dial it in maybe a little bit faster when you're on site.
Correct. Yeah. It's just these starting points, kind of memorize the basics. It's kind of, you know, back in the day, it's just memorizing when you're shooting film, you know, what shutter speeds you would need for different lighting environments, you know, based on the film you had in the camera. So it, and then which film, you know, it on all of that. So, so just kind of the same thing, just knowing that, you know, for bright sunny days, these are the rules. For night photography, these are the rules, more or less. And it's pretty much just back to the old school, but just thinking about it in the digital world, and that we're able to bounce around with our camera settings without having to change a film pack.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it makes it so easy because you can take as many, you know, at least on my end, I can take, you know, 20 test shots and it's no big deal.
Correct.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Because it's just some pixels that are being wasted away. But one thing I forgot to mention is focus. I will almost always shoot manual focus.
Right. Because you're tethering and you can like.
I'm tethering. I have the time to dial in and zoom in with, you know, live view to make sure that it's as sharp as it needs to be.
Correct. Yeah, that makes total sense. So. Well, cool, man. How are we on that?
I think we're good. Hopefully this was a useful episode for our audience. Again, we'll have a bunch of details in the show notes from a landscape. We'll kind of break it out: landscape, wildlife, astro, architecture. And kind of have that in the show notes well as some of the gear that we use. So that way kind of just helps to understand where we're coming from when we use it. And hopefully, Joe, you'll get an opportunity here soon to kind of do that little walkthrough of the back of your camera of how to set up some of these presets on the Sony side.
Totally. Yeah. And that'll be, you know, Sony's are notorious for being a little confusing on that front. So that's why I think it'll be fun there. One of the things too I could mention is, and we can put this like a link in the show notes, is you know, I came from Nikon in the 850. So on my website I have a free download for anyone. It's just simple, just download my settings and you can plug them right into the back of your, or right into your 850, and it's like, you know, instant to awesome. Get all the kind of what I said today, a lot of these kind of basic settings on the back there. In the My Menu, so it helps there as well. So it's all about making, like, for example, I mean, even for you, it's all about, I think, making your camera just truly be the tool that it's meant to be and get out of your way to take the photograph as quickly as possible and easily as possible. Because, you know, I love manual photography and manual cameras, and, you know, it's so fun to do that when you, the time and the place calls for it, you know, to kind of really get into the settings and film and all that. But when I'm out and when you're out, when I'm out working, it's about productivity, not about, in my mind, playing with the camera.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
there's a time and a place for that, and it's not when you're on site trying to get an image for a client, basically.
Right. Right. Like, and I'm not saying, and you're not saying, that it's not about the experience here, you know, but to omit that, it's just more of like, we're just there to get the shot. We need to get the shot. If we're fiddling with the camera, so it can cause you to not get that. So these settings that we're talking here, and I think are a bonus. And I love the quarter of a second for that on activating a space for architecture photography.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Well, we'll do that video, and you know, you can go back to what you got to do today, and I'll keep cranking over here.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. We always appreciate it. To close things out, as always, you can find us on YouTube at InFocus Videocast. We are also on iTunes, Spotify, your favorite podcast locations at InFocus Videocast there as well. Please do email us or send us comments, questions, topics that you want us to discuss. You can do that at infocusvideocast@gmail.com. Our hope here is that these episodes and what we're talking about are useful for you. So please send us your thoughts, and we can make an episode that talks through something that is something that you want to know about. So
yeah, an episode that talks to you.
That's right. Absolutely.
Oh, man. All right.
Well, enjoy the rest of your day, Joe. Always a pleasure. I enjoy these weekly chats.
Yeah, dude, for sure. It's always good seeing you. And again, happy birthday.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks everyone for tuning in, and we will catch up with you next week.
Yeah. See you next week.
See ya. Bye. See ya.